You have your Bibles, we're going to be in the book of 2 Samuel. We'll start in chapter 13. We're going to go for several chapters. We're going to kind of breeze through it. But we're going to talk about David. You know, we're in our series about men in the Bible. Of course, when you deal with men in the Bible, you seem to have to deal with David in the Old Testament, one of the main central figures, especially when it comes to the messianic lineage of Christ. He is considered the son of David and will rule on the throne of David. Very, very significant figure in the Old Testament. Now, you have to understand, David, his life is kind of in segments. Good, the bad, the ugly. And this is going to be coming off the heels of the bad and the ugly. David, as he became king, he kind of got slack on some things, careless, indulgent. And as you know, he committed adultery. Had sexual relations with another man's wife. She became pregnant. He had her husband killed in battle in order to try to cover up his deed, his misdeed. And, of course, he was eventually confronted by the prophet Nathan. And Nathan tells him, David, you are forgiven for your sin. God's not going to kill you for it. But here is what's going to happen. He said, David, the sword will never depart from your house. There's going to be strife. There's going to be turmoil. You're going to have to live it, and you're going to have to go through it. Just how it's going to be. Your wives will be unfaithful. There's going to be, you sold another man's wife. There's going to be stuff that's going to happen to your wives. It's not going to be good. Then he said, thirdly, the child which is conceived by you and Bathsheba, the child's going to die. Of course, that child would die, and eventually they would have another child, and he would be Solomon. But this is the verdict that's been read by the prophet from God to David. Now, David is going to have to live out the rest of his life. He's got years to live. He's probably in his 50s, and he's got days in front of him. So what kind of a life is he going to live? Is he going to provide the leadership that his family, that the nation would need him to provide? Or will he become just kind of a shell of a man? Will he kind of slink back from his responsibilities? Well, unfortunately, it seems like he would choose the latter. He would become kind of a shell of a man. He would slink back from his responsibilities, and it would cost his family, and it would cost the kingdom dearly. And so, knowing that, the immediate history that's in David's life, as we start chapter 13, we're going to kind of breeze through several verses and going to introduce you to some characters. Now, remember, David has several wives and concubines. The concubines would be like kind of secondary lives. They had some legal rights and everything, but kind of considered secondary wives, and he had his other wives. He was indulgent. He kind of got out of hand with some things. But here's what it says when it starts out in verse 1 of chapter 13. We're introduced to a couple of his sons and one of his daughters. It says, after this, Absalom, the son of David, had a lovely sister whose name was Tamar. And Amnon, the son of David, loved her. Amnon was so distressed over his sister Tamar that he became sick, for she was a virgin. It was improper for Amnon to do anything to her. Now, you got to understand, here's the situation. David had several wives. Absalom and Tamar are full brothers and sisters. They have the same daddy and the same mama. Their mom was the daughter of the king of Geshur, which is a small Aramaic kingdom around the Sea of Galilee. And this other guy, Amnon, was a half-brother. David was his daddy, but he had a different mama. But here's the deal. Amnon has a kind of a perverted crush on his half-sister. This is scandalous. This is salacious type stuff. And he has such a lustful desire for his half-sister that it makes him sick. And he knows there's nothing he can do about it. It's not lawful for him to do anything with his half-sister. The law had been given to Moses. That stuff is, nope, you can't do that. And so he knows, you know, I can't lawfully do anything. And so he has this guy, his friend named Jonabad, and he's a kind of a very wicked guy. He's a schemer. And here's what he tells him to do. He says, why don't you pretend like you're sick and ask your daddy, David, King David, if Tamar, your sister, can come prepare something for you in your room. And when she comes, you can take advantage of her. And so look in verse 5. It says, so Jonadab said to him, lie down on your bed and pretend to be ill. And when your father comes to you, to see you, say to him, please let my sister Tamar come and give me food and prepare the food in my sight that I may see and eat it from her hand. So there's his scheme. He's going to have his sister there. Sure enough, he asked his daddy, he said, can she come tend to me? I'm sick. And David said, yeah. So Tamar, his half-sister, goes and prepares him food. And when she goes to serve it to him, he says to everybody else, everybody leave the room. And everybody leaves the room, and it's just him and his half-sister in the room. And long story short, in spite of her pleas and her begging him to stop, he rapes her. Salacious. Terrible stuff. Bad stuff. And here's what happens. He rapes his sister. She's just no longer wears the robes that the virgin daughters of David would wear. She tears a robe and puts her hand on her head and bitterly cries and leaves. He tells her to get out. He hates her more than he ever had lust for her. I mean, Amnon's a bad guy. And so here's what happens in verse 20. It says, so she goes to her brother Absalom. Absalom's her full brother. And Absalom, her brother, said to her in verse 20, if you look there, has Amnon, your brother, been with you? But now hold your peace, my sister. He is your brother. Do not take this thing to heart. So Tamar remained desolate in her brother Absalom's house. But when King David heard of these things, he was very angry. And Absalom spoke to his brother Amnon, neither good nor bad, for Absalom hated Amnon because he had forced his sister Tamar. So here's the first deal we're going to deal with. David has a son that rapes his daughter, and David gets really, really mad about it. But you know what David does? Nothing. He does absolutely nothing. He chooses passivity. And that's the whole thing we're going to be looking at as we look through some of these verses. David chooses to be passive. He chooses to go down the road of passivity. And let me tell you something, guys. When you choose passivity, you abdicate your leadership responsibilities. When you choose passivity, you abdicate your leadership responsibilities. And that is what David is doing. Whether it's because he feels disqualified, because of he was an adulterer and a murderer, and now here his son's doing this perverted stuff, and he's not saying a word about it. He's angry about it. He doesn't even tend to his daughter that we see. Absalom's the one that has to tend to her. David just kind of remains just a bystander. He gets angry about things, but he doesn't do anything. Passivity. Passivity is not good, but passivity is a default that a lot of men fall to. This is kind of a default mechanism that we have. We kind of get passive. There's an article that was in Forbes magazine several years ago, and it was titled, When Men Go Passive and Women Go Wild. And basically what it means is that a man can be engaging and he can be a take charge kind of guy and decisive guy at work, but when he comes home, he goes passive. He just goes passive. And then his wife tries to get him to do something, tries to get him not to get passive, and the more passive he goes, the more voluminous she goes. So he goes more passive and she gets more volume. Goes all the way back to Adam and Eve. Adam's in the garden, and he's just very passively seeing all this transpiring with Eve, the temptation, and then he just kind of follows along suit. When you choose passivity, guys, doesn't matter what's happened in your past, but when you choose passivity, you're going to abdicate your leadership responsibility. And here's the deal. When you abdicate your leadership responsibility, you allow issues to fester and eventually to explode. When you abdicate your leadership responsibility, you allow issues to fester and then to eventually explode. David's not addressing what's happened. He's furious, but he's not addressing it. Absalom, he's angry. Absalom is full of revenge. But he tells his sister, don't you say anything about it. I'm not going to say anything about it. So for 2 years, look in verse 23, it says, and it came to pass after 2 full years that Absalom had sheep shears in Baal Hazar, which is near Ephraim. So Absalom invited all the king's sons. So we know that 2 years goes by. Absalom says nothing. Says nothing about it. He says nothing good nor bad about Amnon. But all this time he's plotting. David hadn't done anything. David's not intervened. David hadn't provided discipline. David's been passive. Now Absalom, he's David's third son. He's angry. Amnon, the guy that did the raping, he is the crown prince. He is the next in line to the throne. He is David's firstborn son. And David's just letting him slide. And Absalom's the third son. Many believe that the second son has already passed away at this time. And Absalom would be next in line for the throne after Amnon. But Absalom's like, okay, daddy's not going to do anything. Nothing's going to happen to Amnon. I'll take care of it myself. 2 years go by. There's a big festivities involved when you had the sheep shearing time. He's going to have a big party. And so what he does is he goes to his daddy. He says, daddy, I want you to come to my big party. We're shearing sheep. I want you to be there, and I'm going to invite all my brothers to come to the party. Now, he knows that David's going to decline. And David says, you know what? If I come, I'm going to bring my entourage. You can't afford to feed us all. It's going to be a burden on you. I'm not going to come. And then Absalom says, look in verse 26. If not, please let my brother Amnon go with us. And the king said to him, why should he go with you? So David's a little bit suspicious. Okay, you want all the brothers to go with you, but you're especially asking for Amnon. What's going on? But Absalom says, I just want all my brothers to come. So David consents. He gives permission for Amnon and the rest of the brothers to go to this party that Absalom's having surrounding sheep shearing time. It's been 2 years since Amnon has raped Tamar. Well, look in verse 28. Now Absalom had commanded his servant, saying, watch now, when Amnon's heart is merry with wine, and when I say to you, strike Amnon, then kill him. Do not be afraid. Have I not commanded you? Be of good courage and valiant. So the servants of Absalom did to Amnon as Absalom had commanded. Then all the king's sons arose, and each one got on his mule, and they fled. See, David had not done anything. He's been passive. So Absalom says, you know what? I will avenge my sister's honor. You're not going to rape my sister and nothing but get done about it. So what he does, he has his party, tells his servants, when Amnon is drunk, I'm going to give the word, I want you all to stab him. Just him, just stab him to death. And so Amnon's drunk at this party, and Absalom gives the command, and his servants jump on Amnon, and they stab him to death. He's dead. All the other sons flee back to Jerusalem to David. Well, Absalom can't go back home. He's got to go into exile. And so look in verse 37. It says, Absalom fled and went to Talmai, the son of Amahud, king of Geshur. And David mourned for his son every day. So Absalom fled and went to Geshur and was there for 3 years. And David longed to go see Absalom, for he had been comforted concerning Amnon because he was dead. So when David got over it, he says, all right, would like to see Absalom, but Absalom's in exile. For 3 years now, Absalom goes into exile. Remember, Absalom's mom is the daughter of the king of Geshur. So what Absalom does is he goes into exile up to Geshur with his granddaddy for 3 years. 3 years, he's in exile. 3 years. Now, look in verse 1 of chapter 14. It says, so Joab, the son of Zeruiah, perceived that the king's heart was concerned about Absalom. Now, Joab, we're introduced to him. He is the commander of David's army. Very important guy. Now, he realizes this, Joab, the commander of the army. We have the crown prince, the next in line to the Davidic throne. He's in exile with the king of Geshur. David's heart, David's thinking about Absalom. This is not good for the kingdom when you have unfinished business like this, when you have all this stuff hanging. We need to get something resolved. And so what Joab does is he hires this lady to pretend like, to be an actress basically, to pretend like there's an issue that needs to be resolved. And in the resolving this issue, she makes David see that he needs to bring Absalom back. That's long story short. And so look there in verse 24. So David consents and he gives an agreement for Absalom to come back after 3 years in exile. It says, the king said, let him return to his own house, but do not let him see my face. So Absalom returned to his own house, but did not see the king's face. And then we're kind of told a little bit about Absalom in verse 25. It says, now in Israel there was no one who was praised as much as Absalom for his good looks. From the sole of his foot to the crown of his head, there was no blemish on him. Absalom was a man's man. He's very charismatic, very good-looking guy. A guy that people would want to have as a king. And so for the next 2 years, Absalom comes back into Jerusalem. But the king says this, he can come back, but here's the deal, he cannot see me. Translation, he cannot enjoy the privileges of royalty. He can come back, he can live in Jerusalem, but he cannot eat at the royal table, he cannot be a part of any of the royal festivities. He's kind of back home, but he's still kind of in exile, but he's at least back home. See, David's hand is being forced on this. And David's just, okay, he can come back, but I'm not going to deal with him. He's passive once again. He's passive. He can come back, okay, if that's the way it's got to be, he can come back, but I don't want to see him. And David is willing to live with this unresolved conflict for 2 more years. For 2 more years. He comes back, he's home for 2 years. And then something happens. Look in verse 28. It says, Absalom dwelt 2 full years in Jerusalem, but did not see the king's face. Therefore, Absalom sent for Joab to send him to the king, but he would not come to him. And when he would not come again the second time he asked for him, he would not come then either. So here's the deal. Absalom's back in Jerusalem for 2 years. He's kind of in exile in Jerusalem, can't participate in any of the royal functions. David's passive. Yeah, just let him be back. I'm not going to deal with him. I'm not going to deal with the issue. But Absalom's the type of guy, he's got ambition. His granddaddy's the king of Geshur. His dad's the king of Israel. He's got ambition, and he cannot be a man in exile in his own country. He cannot be a man that is excluded from royal functions. He calls for Joab, the commander of the army, to come talk to him about it. Does it twice, Joab won't come. And if you read the next several verses, you'll see what he does is he sends his men out. He says, all right, Joab won't come talk to me. Y'all go burn his barley fields up. So his men go and they set fire to Joab's barley fields, burn up his fields, and Joab shows up at Absalom's doorstep saying, why are you burning my land? And Absalom says, all right, here's the deal. I want you to go tell my daddy. If I've done something wrong, I want him to convict me and I want him to execute me. Or I want him to fully restore me to the kingdom. I'm not going to live in this limbo anymore. So what's happening is now Absalom's forcing passive David's hand. You're either going to have to kill me or restore me. So Joab goes and tells the king that. So the king calls Absalom in. Look in verse 33. So Joab went to the king and told him. And when he had called for Absalom, he came to the king and bowed himself on the ground, his face on the ground before the king. Then the king kissed Absalom. Now, when he kissed Absalom, that meant he was fully reconciled as far as to royal functions. But guess what's never spoken of here? As he restores him back to the kingdom, they never talk about Tamar, and they don't talk about Amnon. Comes in, all right, you're restored. Leave. When you are passive, you abdicate your leadership responsibilities. Your passivity allows issues to fester and to eventually explode. Have you ever had family situation? I mean, we have. I mean, I think probably every family has. You don't talk about the obvious. I mean, there's so many 800-pound gorillas in the room, they can't even hardly move. But everything's not okay. We just won't talk about it. Never resolved. Never resolved. Just kind of a wink and a nod. All right. You're restored. That's it. Look what Absalom does. And Absalom's a man, he's got ambition. He's a good-looking guy, and people like him. Look in verse 15. Here's what he does. Now, he's restored fully. He's got his royal, niceties he can enjoy now. Look in verse 1 of chapter 15. It says, now it happened that Absalom provided himself with chariots and horses and 50 men to run before. Now, that's what a king would do, but he's not a king. Now Absalom would rise early and stand beside the way of the gate. So it was when everyone who had a lawsuit came to the king for a decision that Absalom would call to him and say, what city are you from? And he would say, your servant is from such and such a tribe of Israel. Then Absalom would say to him, look, your case is good and right, but there is no deputy of the king to hear you. Moreover, Absalom would say, oh, that I were judge in the land, and everyone who had any suit or cause would come to me, then I would give them justice. And so it was whenever anyone came near to bow down to him that he would take him by the hand and take him up and he would kiss him. In this manner, Absalom acted toward Israel, all of Israel who came to the king for judgment. So Absalom stole the hearts of the men of Israel. This is what he does, and we're told he does this for 4 years. He undermines his dad's authority right under his dad's nose. When you have 50 guys running in front of you and you have a chariot, you're acting like a king. He's not king. David's king. And then what he would do is he would cut people off before they could get to David who were going for justice. And he would say, look, there's nobody from the king to hear you. If I was king, I'd give you justice. But nobody's here to hear you. And then when they'd say, oh, Absalom, you're an awesome guy, and they'd go to bow down to him, he'd pick him and say, no, let's don't do that. You don't have to do that for me. And he'd kiss him. Huh? They'd be like, that is really a great guy. That guy's charismatic. That guy makes me feel good about myself. And what happens? The Bible says he began to steal the hearts of the people from David. This is a silent coup. There is a coup that is happening. Then, look if you will. It says in verse 7, now it came to pass after 4 years that Absalom said to the king, please let me go to Hebron and pay the vow which I have made before the Lord. So 4 years of this undermining goes on. And then Absalom says, Daddy, when I was in exile, you remember when I spent those 3 years up with my granddaddy up in Geshur? I made a vow to the Lord. And now it's time for me to fulfill that vow. I mean, I know it's, you know, I've been back for, you know, 6 years, but it's time that I got to go, you know, repay that vow that I made to the Lord. And David's like, okay, you can go to 20 miles away. You can go to Hebron. And here's what he does in verse 10. It says, then Absalom sent spies throughout all the tribes of Israel. It says, as soon as you hear the sound of the trumpet, then you shall say, Absalom reigns in Hebron. And with Absalom went 200 men invited from Jerusalem, and they went along innocently and did not know anything. So Absalom has his men all throughout Israel. They know there's about to be a coup. Absalom takes 200 of the most important guys from Jerusalem to be a part of his entourage as he goes down to Hebron. They don't know what's happening. They don't know they're going to be part of a coup, but it makes it look like they're with him. And then when they give the sound, Hebron was where David spent his first 7 years as king before he became king of all of Israel. Very significant place, significant city. And when they say, Absalom is king, that spreads all throughout Israel. And all these people, dignitaries are with him, makes it look like everybody's involved in the coup. So Absalom has led a coup against his dad. Verse 13, it says, now when a messenger came to David saying, the hearts of the men of Israel are with Absalom. So David knows, I've got to get out of Jerusalem. It says, verse 16, then the king went out and all his household after him. So here's David, he's having to flee Jerusalem. He's been passive, and now his passivity has allowed things to fester and eventually to explode into a coup led by his son Absalom. Absalom's coming to Jerusalem to kill David. David knows he has to leave Jerusalem. That's what his passivity got him. He never addressed Tamar. He never addressed Amnon. He got mad about it. But he never addressed it. He actually gave permission for Tamar to go into Amnon when Amnon raped her. He actually gave permission for Absalom to take Amnon to the party and Absalom killed Amnon. He actually gave permission for Absalom to go to Hebron where Absalom began the coup, the takeover. See, in his passivity, he just became a pawn for others to move. He just kind of got swept along as others manipulated. Even Joab manipulated him in order to get Absalom back. And in your passivity, you allow issues to fester and they will eventually explode. Now, I don't know, if you're a man here, if you're a husband, father, are you passive? Do you just watch things go by? And you say, you know what? I made some mistakes in my past. I really don't feel like I should say anything. My goodness, you have a responsibility to say something. You better believe. If I touched a stove and it burned my hand, if I saw my child about to touch the stove, I wouldn't say, you know what? I did that when I was young. They'll learn from it. No, you say, I know that burns. I don't want them to do it. David chose passivity. And in his passivity, he allowed the issues to fester, and then he allowed them to eventually explode. And what he didn't want to deal with all those years, and what he swept under the rug all those years, eventually somebody moved the rug. And there they were. Boom. It exploded. He's having to leave Jerusalem. And if you read the next several chapters, it talks about the people that sided with David, the people that sided with Absalom. It talks about how Absalom would take the advice of Ahithophel, and he would set up a tent on top of the palace. And David left behind 10 of his concubines, his secondary wives. And on top of that palace, at that same palace that he'd looked down and saw Bathsheba bathing and had her come up and have relations with her, his own son set up a tent on top of that palace and went into 10 of his wives and violated them. What you did in private, the prophet had told David, it will be done in public to you. David's scurrying out of Jerusalem. He's leaving. Absalom has led the coup. All the momentum is with Absalom. But fortunately, Absalom would listen to the advice of a man named Hushai instead of Ahithophel. And the advice would be, hey, just gather all your forces. Don't go after David yet because, you know, he's like a wild animal cornered. You don't want him like that. Gather up all your army and then go after him. And what that did is that allowed David to regroup in the wilderness, allow him to array his forces. And long story short, they do go to battle. And during the course of the battle, David's men prevail. And Absalom, he gets caught up in some trees, and he's hanging from some trees. He's still alive, and the men come upon Absalom. And David had given word saying, whatever you do, please do not kill Absalom. Let Absalom live. But Joab, the commander of the army, when he comes and he sees Absalom stuck up in some trees, he's still alive. Joab says, this guy can't live. He's nothing but trouble. And Joab kills Absalom. So there's been this big battle. David's been kicked out of Jerusalem. His men rally and give him a major military victory. The instigator of the coup, Absalom, is killed. And now David's men are coming back to the city of Mahanaim where David had been holed up. And they're victorious. But look what happens. When they come back, here's what David says in chapter 18, verse 29. It says, the king said, is the young man Absalom safe? As men, his army has just been battling Absalom. They've come back with a victory. And David, all he can care about is Absalom okay? Look in verse 33 of chapter 18. It says, then the king, when he finds out Absalom's dead, it says, then the king was deeply moved and went up to the chambers over the gate. And he wept. And as he went, he said thus, oh, my son Absalom, if only I had died in your place. Oh, Absalom, my son, my son. And Joab, remember, he's the commander of the army. He was told, behold, the king is weeping and mourning for Absalom. So the victory that day turned into mourning for all the people. For the people heard it and said that day, the king is grieved for his son. And the people stole back into the city that day as people who are ashamed steal away when they flee in battle. In other words, his army that was victorious, that saved his life and his family's life, now when they come back and they see David crying and weeping over Absalom, the guy that was the instigator of the rebellion, and they see David crying, they're like, man, have we done something wrong? Have we done something bad? And instead of celebrating a victory, they all feel like they're criminals or something because the king is crying over the guy that led the rebellion. And then Joab, look in verse 5, it says, Then Joab came into the house where David was, and he said, today you have disgraced all your servants who today have saved your life, the lives of your sons and your daughters, the lives of your wives and the lives of your concubines, in that you love your enemies and hate your friends. For you have declared today that you regard neither prince nor servants. For today I perceive that if Absalom had lived and all of us had died today, then it would have pleased you well. Now therefore arise and go out and speak comfort to your servants. For I swear by the Lord, if you do not go out, not one will stay with you this night. And that will be worse for you than all the evil that has befallen you from your youth until now. Then the king arose and sat in the gate, and they told all the people, saying, "There is the king sitting in the gate." So all the people came before the king, for everyone of Israel had fled to his tent. So here's what happens. Joab goes to David, and he basically says, if you don't get a grip, you're going to lose everything. You're going to lose it all. If you stay in this emotional mess that you're in right now, you're going to lose it all. Nobody's going to stick with you. Right? He's talking to the king. God said, you just got a few hours. You're about to lose everybody. We have risked our lives for you. And now we all know that you would rather Absalom had lived and all of us had died. You're about to lose it all. Let me tell you something. You choose passivity. And in your passivity, you allow issues to fester and eventually to explode. And then you get all in a turmoil about it. You better get a grip. You better get a grip. You know what David had to do? He had to go into the gate and he had to talk to his army. He had to say, listen, guys, we won the victory. Guys, you were awesome. You did a great job. You know what he had to do after that? He had a divided kingdom. If you read the next several chapters, David had to use a lot of skill and diplomacy in order to reunite his kingdom. And he did it. He had to snap out of it. He had to get a grip on himself. That's King David, a man after God's own heart. That's the same guy that went into the valley and fought a giant in his youth. That's the guy that was willing to spend 8 years in the wilderness before he became king in order to do things the right way. Man, he'd gotten knocked off his game. He'd lost his confidence. He'd lost just security. And for several years, he allowed himself to be like the ball in a pinball machine, just whatever to hit him next would knock him whatever direction it'd knock him. He was so passive. But now, basically, Joab's saying, you better get out of that passivity and you better take some action. Get out of your passivity. You better take some action. Because if you don't take some action, you are going to lose it all. You're going to lose it all. That's King David, a man after God's own heart. Listen, guys. I know life is disappointing. I know life is tough. I know there are successes and there are failures along the way, and there are mountaintops and valleys. It's just how it is. That's life. But you don't choose passivity. Be the man that God's called you to be. Be the leader that God wants you to be. You choose passivity and you allow all this stuff to keep on happening, and there's stuff that you can do, some leadership you can provide, some direction you can help people take in a loving, kind way, the way you're supposed to do it. Or maybe there's some firmness that you need to have. But you're like, you know what? I'd rather just watch this next basketball game than to get involved. First of all, it's rigged. I'm kidding. No, I shouldn't say that. But I was disappointed. But you got to choose to be active. And sometimes you just need somebody to come to you and say, man, you got to get a grip. You got to get a grip. If you don't get a grip, you're going to lose it. You think it's bad now, you don't get a grip, you're going to lose a lot more. So let me ask you guys, are you in passivity? Are you allowing something right now through passivity to fester? Are you sweeping stuff under the rug? Because what amazing thing is that David and Absalom, when Absalom came back to the kingdom, they didn't talk about Tamar. They didn't talk about Amnon. They just don't talk about it. Boy, Absalom had a chip on his shoulder, and it even got bigger. And where there should have been that love, there's hatred. Hatred. So guys, as we look at men in the Bible, I know we've looked at some not the best of circumstances. Remember last week how Tyler reminded us that sin is a team sport? And there's a lot riding on you. So if you're choosing passivity, let me just encourage you. Come out of that passivity. If you're letting something fester, you better tend to it, because it will eventually explode. And if you're at that point where, okay, there's some stuff exploding, you better get a grip. You better get a grip and do what you need to do. All right.